When I was a kid, it was kind of like what you would see in a quality horror movie. I would, hear voices or see things. Clipped one of those at a full run and smashed my head into a brick wall, and I was dead for a couple of minutes. When I get a male client, I like to tell them, I'm like, look, at some point in time, I'm going to make you cry. It's not an issue of what traits are present, it's an issue of what traits are present in extremes.
Welcome to episode 47 of Super States, Practices of Transformation, with me, your host, Joshua Peters. Super States explores the overlap of using trance states in all the ways you can access them with either personal or professional growth. So in every episode, we talk to experts, leaders, and revolutionary thinkers, all of them sharing the latest information, tools, along with their own personal stories, inspiring us on our journey to growth. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast through your favorite podcast host or on YouTube so you can stay up to date with new episodes. If you enjoy the show, give me a 5-star review and share the show with a friend. That is the best way to help this show grow. Today, I'm excited to speak with Nick Ely. Nick blends physical training, hypnosis, and ritual magic to help his clients recover from injuries, tackle mental health challenges, and explore spiritual growth. He specializes in helping men navigate mental health issues and to break free from the impact of religious trauma, helping to guide them towards a balanced and a fulfilling life. Stay tuned for a fascinating conversation exploring hypnosis and ritual magic with Nick Ely. Welcome to Super States. I am here today with Nick Ely. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joshua, how's it going?
It's going fantastic today. I got sunny day here in Minnesota.
It's a solid 90 some degrees expected at the end of February here in DFW. So we're kind of a little surprised. Yeah.
Well, Nick, I like to always start out with this first question of share with us what it is that you do and how that makes an impact on people's lives.
Well, I do two things, actually. I wear more hats than I probably should, to be fair. But I run a multitasked business. I do personal training with clients who usually are elderly or are recovering from injuries so that they can recover their movement and improve quality of life. But my real passion is hypnosis and ritual magic. So in that business, which is starting to blossom and boom, just the way I want it to, I am currently specializing in men's mental health and religious deprogramming as far as religious or philosophical trauma goes. And for those clients who are open to it, I offer education on philosophical magic and how to actually use older technologies that are related to hypnosis, how to access things and reframe their lives in a way that they want it to be.
That's fascinating. I've got some questions for you, but before I jump into those, tell us kind of how you got to this point. That's pretty interesting space to be in. So what led you here? Like, what's your backstory?
Well, when I was a kid, it was kind of like what you would see in a quality horror movie. I would, hear voices or see things. And I learned very quickly, one does not mention these things to a conservative father who is a bad attempt at a preacher. My dad was a preacher, but he was a Southern preacher. So there was booze and all that jazz involved. Preacher. So I learned very quickly to keep that to myself, but it didn't change the fact that I was seeing unusual phenomenon, what I now know would be ghosts or spirits or things, spooky moments. And that continued, and I largely ignored most of it until I was 15 and I had a full death experience. I was running across the street with some friends. I tripped on what we call a guide wire in Texas, because the winds and tornadoes can come through and level everything. A lot of our power poles have wires that hold them into the ground. Mm-hmm. these aren't always visible. So I clipped one of those at a full run and smashed my head into a brick wall. And I was dead for a couple of minutes. Thankfully, one of my friends, his mom was going by, and she happened to be a medical doctor. So we flagged her down, and they managed to bring me back. But when I came back, things kind of got dialed to 11 a little bit. And always had that feeling of never really being alone, of having those moments of being in different deeper states, super states, so to speak, where unusual things would keep happening. And I simply followed that. I picked up hypnosis at roughly the same time, which I don't feel was an accident. I literally just felt a draw towards a book on a shelf, pulled it off, and, oh man, I cannot remember the name of it or who wrote it, but it was just The Secrets of Hypnosis. Picked it up. I had friends who were patient and indulged me. And before we knew it, I had a little teenage stage show that I would do at parties. And moved into therapy a couple of years after that.
Yeah, and that's
pretty much it.
Great. I mean, that's a great kind of a loaded term there, because that's an interesting way that you kind of got into that by having that near death experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You mentioned that you help people that are open to it to kind of explore these alternate spiritualities that you're that you're talking about. So what are the types of things that people are looking for when they are reaching out to you?
Gotcha. So here in Texas, I always have to be very careful, because a lot of the tropes that you hear in the rest of the country about the hyper religiosity is very accurate, unfortunately. But on the flip side of that coin, that means a large number of people come to me because they come to a very sudden existential realization in their life that their religion was the religion that they were in. Let me put it that way, so I'm not offending anyone. Wasn't true, wasn't accurate. Most often, it's something like preacher abuse, which, not an accident, also something I went through when I was a kid. And they see the fallibility in their belief systems, and they get lost. And that's a terrible place to be if you're a person of any faith, to suddenly realize you've been channeling your energy in a direction that isn't healthy for you, to put it politely. So I will see people who are very often in existential trauma or who are looking for purpose. And I work closely with the goddess Hecate, and I believe that she sends these people to me every so often, because they all tend to say the same thing. And they often come to me in threes too, which is always kind of like a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge from her. So I'll see that. And very often past life regression is how they open the door, which, as you know, is not at all conducive to modern Christian beliefs. But very often people will come to me and they say, hey, tell me about past life regression. And I'll be like, what are your religious beliefs? And that just opens the door. Oh, there we go. Okay, you're one of mine. So, yeah, that's generally what happens.
And what have you always had this kind of calling of helping people find that? Like,
yes, ironically. And it's a very interesting pattern. And as you know, patterns, I mean, that's how the mind works neurologically with the RAS, but also just cognitively. The fact that my dad was a preacher, and then I'm technically a reverend through the ULC. I filled out the paperwork on the internet and everything, but that advanced schooling. But it follows a certain pattern where he tended to try to lead people, and then now I'm trying to lead people in different directions. And every time I try and wander off that path, I get very harsh reminders. It's kind of funny in a very real way. Once I, you know, on the few occasions I've tried to neglect the magic or tried to go pure science, I will have everything go belly up for a little bit. I mean, you know, I've never been homeless or anything like that, but my clients will dry up, or I'll have, you know, like a depressive event or something like that, something that is out of character for me. Just kind of that way of saying, hey, you need to get back onto your path, which oftentimes is what people come to see me for as well. So gentle reminders that aren't so gentle sometimes.
Right. It seems like the path that we are on as healers or coaches is often the same path that our clients kind of that naturally come to us are also on.
Absolutely. And you might remember a few years ago, I did a Legacy of Hypnosis presentation at the HypnoThoughts Live Convention. And that was very much on that note. It was, we're here for this purpose. You don't get, well, that's not true. Some people get into hypnosis to make gobs of money and they succeed. But other people go in because there literally is no other way for them to live their life other than to transmute their pain into something that helps other people overcome their pain. And realistically, that's the human mission, right? We're not here to get a bunch of money that you're just going to die and leave behind anyways. We're here to, you know, help our fellow human being out of the muck and to leave a legacy that uplifts people, not so much make billions of dollars and then die with the most toys.
Have you ever had a moment during your career where you got fed up or wanted to give up?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I had a very rough one just last year. People will come to me because they'll come to me through different channels. Like I love to leave my alternative business cards, I like to call them, where I offer magical practices and such at like local crystal shops, witch stores, things like that. And one guy came to me and he had a very unfortunate event. His girlfriend's ex-boyfriend shot himself on their front doorstep. And thereafter, he was experiencing a haunting, what was clearly a haunting. He was seeing shadow figures at his bed, and he was seeing something following him. He thought he was losing his mind. And I'm like, well, I'm not a psychotherapist, but let's take a look. While we were discussing it, and this is where many people will check out of the conversation at this point, I don't blame them. But while we were talking about it, something simply opened the door to my office. And I was like, oh, okay, I think I know what we're dealing with. Good news is you're not crazy. Bad news is there's a problem. So I was teaching him some basics of self-hypnosis, psychic self-defense, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, he lost his battle and claimed his own life. And that one got me.
Yeah.
Because that's the first time that's happened. And for a while, it was very much a very difficult walk through a shadow-filled room, to sound poetic for no reason. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it happened in such a way that I believe it was meant to, at least my interaction with that event, was meant to remind me of the stakes that we play at as healers. I mean, we like to think it's all woo-woo and love and light and everything like that. To a larger degree, it is. But you can't win them all. And those people who come to us in pain have real pain and real issues to deal with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was the most recent one.
How did you move through that?
Oh, it was not easy. There was a bit of deliberate dissociation from the event for a bit so I could look at it more clearly. Spent some time with some friends, and then actually talked with his spirit a little bit. Mm-hmm. And his spirit, it was very clear that he carried that depression past the threshold. He was still depressed, post body. And he did say, you know, thanks for trying. And I'm like, okay, that was like the worst possible thing you could have said, man. So we had that conversation and not to sound too woo woo or spooky, but the thing that attached to him tried to have a go at me because I noticed I was exhibiting a lot more depression and I was seeing a particular thing out of the corner of my eyes, which is often how I'll see malevolent things. But that thing is now proudly mounted on my wall in a spirit trap. So I settled that score, at least.
What would you say is most misunderstood about, I guess, either hypnosis or about these magical practices.
Gotcha. Well, hypnosis and magic fundamentally are the same thing. And there's a lot of people who I absolutely love who will argue vehemently against me with that. But they have a misconception of what magic is. Magic is literally finding new and often exciting ways to use consciousness in a description much larger than what we normally function with. The mistake most people make here, especially in my immediate area in Texas, is they believe that I'm, you know, slaughtering goats and, you know, hail Satan and all this. And, mm-hmm. and frankly, it's ridiculous because Satan doesn't exist, not in the way that people think that he does. And they'll turn around and they'll tell me, you can't ever work supernatural forces. That's nonsense. And then they offer to pray for my soul. And it's like, come on, guys. What are we doing here? People tend to fear what's within them. Above all else, most people will gladly go and fight in a war where there's immediate danger to themselves than they will sit in a room with somebody who will simply ask them, how are you feeling right now? Especially men will do that. And that fear translates itself into fear of the other, fear of something I've never done before. And if somebody has made the mistake of watching too many scary movies in their life, they already have way too powerful a framework to break easily because mm-hmm. they think that everything they don't understand is a threat. But as you know, the reality of it is once we conquer that fear, it's the only time we can actually grow as individuals.
Yeah.
So that's usually the most challenge, is getting people to break their frame and to move through that fear.
Yeah. Yeah. I can resonate with that for sure. How do you find able to help them move through that? What's the best way that you found?
Well, generally speaking, what I will start with is somebody who's experienced existential religious trauma, right? Which there's an overabundance of right now, as we're seeing, not to get political, but we're seeing politics stick its fingers into religion and everything's falling in pieces, right? Mm-hmm. Is to get people to believe and understand the reality that we're meant to be creatures of belief. We are meant to connect with things larger than us. Whether you believe that there's a God, goddess, whatever force, you want to put a name on it, cool. If not, that's fine. But we're meant to feel a sense of connection with something greater than us. And I think every human being resonates with that right off the bat. That's what religion is there for. It's to provide a connection with those powers that are bigger than us. Once we open that door, then I can help a person find a version of that thing bigger than them that they want to connect with. And that's the part that always weirds people out, because they always think it's, you know, either good or bad. And it's just kind of like, good and bad is such a silly concept. Like, a wolf is a wonderful creature. A deer will tell you it's wicked as hell. But a puppy, a wolf puppy, is going to tell you mom and dad are the best. Mm-hmm. It's all in the context that we look at. So helping people to understand what we are built to do by whoever built us, and I make no claims to know, that generally is the starting point. We're meant to grow. Yeah, we're meant to suffer, because that's how we grow. But helping them move through that is generally that. And I will usually show them the very basic elements of psychological conditioning along magical lines, like the sigil portion of the glass course that I taught that you were in. Yeah.
And I kind of want to come back to what you started with here too. You mentioned that you really focus on helping men.
Men's mental health, yes.
Men's mental health, got it. And what kind of drove that for you?
Well, I went through college at a later age. I got my undergrad at 41, which actually, I always recommend going back to college at a later age because, I mean, you have a lot more maturity and a lot more life experience. And it's great walking into a room on day one if you're there before the professor and everybody thinks you're the teacher. It's so much fun. But I remember having to sign paperwork at University of California, they're litigious, so I'm not going to name which college, but signing paperwork that admitted that as a male, I was a threat to women. And I had to watch a video and I had to be taught by this girl who was 19 years old trying to tell me how life worked. Non-conditional, like if I did not sign that paperwork, I don't get to go and get a degree. And I remember thinking, what in the hell is this nonsense? Like being Generation X, being lectured by, you know, a Generation Z, not to make it about age, about what I am as a man. And I'm like, this is nonsensical. This is ridiculous. So that was a very uncomfortable conversation for both of us. And that was a pattern that kept going. And I remember sitting in a psychology course after having, as a full-grown adult man, having had relationships that went great and relationships that went bad, and seeing how nasty people can be on whatever spectrum of the gender spectrum you're on, mm-hmm. or whatever part in the gender spectrum you're on, realizing that we've become a culture of victim claiming and victim blaming. And it goes every direction. It's not that one side suffers and the other side doesn't. What I will usually teach people is that people who are usually the pro-feminist claim of, you know, the patriarchy being out to keep women down. That's true. Fundamentally, I mean, you can't look at the society and argue that that's not a thing. But whereas the number of problems that women have going on tend to be greater in number, the severity of consequence is greater for men. And people look at me crazy when I say that. And I'm like, okay, listen, here's a statistic for you. For every one woman that attempts suicide, 4 to 5 men complete suicide.
Wow.
And people kind of, they look at me and they freak out. I used to carry a little booklet that had the peer-reviewed articles on it. That's how often people would argue with me. And the reality of it is, as a society, we've come to depend on men continually giving every last ounce of life that they have. It's the stereotype. It's the archetype, right? Man goes to work 9 to 5, comes home, gets up and goes 5, 6, maybe 7 days a week. He doesn't get to raise his children, including his sons. He doesn't get to set the standard for his sons. He doesn't get to be there for his wife, right? And we're supposed to just fall into this and not believe that that is a horrible sacrifice that that man is making, and that that pressure builds up because society has also trained him not to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Take all his feelings, put him in a box in the chest, never address it, and then die early, leaving everything you've amassed, hopefully, in your life to your wife and kids. Or to simply run off to war. So some politician gets, you know, a 2-point bump in their oil portfolio. So we have developed this culture that depends on men completely negating the emotional part of their lives, completely forgetting the fact that we're supposed to feel, we're supposed to cry, we're supposed to feel these beautiful freaking moments in life. But if we are just continually trying to follow that, you know, hard-nosed, driven, almost psychotic drive towards accrual of resources at any consequence of continual sacrifice and then of going out and nobly dying somewhere, well, what's the point? And unfortunately, that's where many men's minds will lead them when they say, what's the point? And that's when it gets dangerous for them. So after seeing that pattern, I finally made the questionable choice to start speaking out on men's mental health. And I have, I'm proud to say I keep track of the numbers, and I don't mean this as a brag in any sort, but I have saved over 30 lives from suicide.
Nice.
Men who have reached out to me. And I have been escorted off of 5 different campuses. I take a little bit of pride in that. Not because, you know, there's no rebellious in there. I'm just kind of like, I just like to keep track of campuses where students like to lose their minds. It's kind of sad, but at the same point in time, I can't help but kind of shake my head and laugh at it. To say that men have mental health needs is tantamount in some people's minds to diminishment of women's rights. It's mind-boggling, but it is something we need to address.
Yeah. The pendulum, it's the pendulum swinging too far. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's the world. All we can do is save the ones we can save,
and that's a noble practice.
Yeah. Do it again. That awkward so, male moment where you're just like, oh, a compliment. Let me look anywhere else.
Well, you know, I have found, you know, I found a very similar experience where I get men in my practice as well that have part of the beginning of what we're doing is helping them learn to feel and learn to be able to describe what they feel. And and some are successful. Some are not as successful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very rewarding. I like to tell people, and when I get a male client, I like to tell them, I'm like, look, at some point in time, I'm going to make you cry. And if they get up and walk out of the room there, that's okay, because my terms of service specifically say I don't do refunds. But if they walk, they're not ready. If they look at me sideways, that's good. That's a door open right there.
Yeah.
And it's rewarding as hell, making other men cry.
and I think that, you know, it's, all joking aside, it's likely that you create a space for them to be able to be comfortable enough to share that with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it depends on how, for anybody who wants to try this really challenging field, and I do want to stress, if anybody wants to get into this, there are so many voices in it right now that are hostile, misogynistic, and just plain nasty. There are other podcast hosts besides Joshua, of course, who will literally just invite women on to just mistreat them, or who will teach men it's okay to just be filled with hate and bile and just make money and all that BS. Think carefully before you go into it, because you play at very high stakes, like I said, with my other unfortunate client.
Yeah.
But getting into it is, it's all about helping men actually understand what they're going through, because we don't have the language for it. And most of the language for psychotherapists right now, the diagnostic language, is based on self-report data, which is the least reliable data that you can get. And when you really start to do some digging, and a large number of scientists have, we start to realize men don't do self-report data. So all the diagnostic language for depression, anxiety, thoughts of self-injury, those mostly come from women and their experience, which is valuable data, but it is not applicable to, like, well, let's just say half of the population. So when a man comes in and he's angry and he doesn't know why, and he's worried that he's so angry, his family might be in danger. You know, whether in danger from him or in danger of homelessness because he can't keep a job, something like that. It is so crucial to help them, like you said, understand and feel. Like, yeah, you need to understand. You've been told the world is built for you, but the reality of it is the world is built to use you, just like everybody else. And your only point is, your only real solution is to understand that and adjust your life to flourish in that system. And that's where, that's usually where you'll get them looking at you like, how does this person know what's going on in my mind? It's not voodoo. It's just the way the world is at this point.
Yeah. Well, shared experience goes a long way.
Yeah, big time. And I think that really is where hypnotherapists flourish as opposed to psychotherapists. And don't get me wrong. I mean, my degree is in psychology. I value psychotherapy. But so much of that information really doesn't apply very well yet. And there are some people who are thinking that psychotherapeutic models are skewing more heavily to help women than they are to help men, because women statistically are more likely to seek help. Thankfully, this new generation, millennials and Gen Z, seem to be kind of moving in the right direction of their men being more in touch.
Yeah, I think there is a shifting in all masculinity is toxic to, wait a minute, there's such a thing as toxic masculinity, and then there's positive masculinity as well.
Yes. And it's not an issue of what traits are present. It's an issue of what traits are present in extremes. Like, yes, aggression in men can be extremely toxic. 100%, no question about it. But I've done martial arts all my life, for example, and I was in the military. So aggression in extremes is horrible, especially when you bring it home. But let's say a man is at home and he has trained himself to not be aggressive at all, and somebody breaks in the door. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is a balance that we have to learn that men have fallen out of being, a lot of veterans I work with fall into that warrior archetype very heavily. They don't have a different framework to work with. So I like to introduce them to concepts like the old Irish concepts of the warrior poets or the samurai, who, you know, unquestionably BA, but also would study poetry, study music. Because, you know, these ancient cultures, they knew we can't have a bunch of total psychopaths running around all the time.
The samurai have a code of ethics and a code of honor that is applicable in the modern day.
With the exception of slavish obligation to whoever's paying your bills. Yeah, absolutely. Can you imagine, like, somebody's like, oh, well, my boss fired me. Time to hire Curry. No, that's not good.
Fair enough. Nick, who are some of the biggest influences on you?
One really big influence. Every shidoshi I've had. I'm not going to use full names because I don't have their permission, and I practice ninjutsu. So a lot of us don't like to have our names out there. But if they catch this, guys, I owe you literally. The man that I am is directly responsible, or a direct result of your actions. Carl Gustav Jung, I absolutely love his work. It was a product of its time, and people are refining it more. But I think that he really did set the ground for that. Those, I think, are the biggest influences from there. And then, of course, I mean, there's everybody that you and I both know from HypnoThoughts. I mean, Mike Mandel, Melissa Teer, all the amazing people that we meet, who are too many to name at this point. So I'm just going to name two and pretend like I'm playing favorites.
Yeah.
The folks who set those up, I think.
There are so many amazing ideas out there, and a lot of really way smarter than me kind of people that are making, taking the ideas of hypnosis to even different levels.
Oh, absolutely. Even people that you don't agree with, like, I love Melissa Tears, for example, that lady I just mentioned. She and I, our approaches are vastly different. She's very neuroscience. I'm a little neuroscience and very magic. And then, of course, we don't agree on a number of other things, but every time I've gotten together with her, it's a heck of a time. And that's what I love about this field. It's so much less cluttered and less, there's not the oppressive thumb of like a state board of psychology like you see in psychotherapists, to circle back to that. Pressing down on us and letting us actually heal people outside of an insurance company's financial needs.
Fair enough, yeah. So based on your experience, what's a practical way that someone could use these super states we're talking about to make a difference in their life?
So I'll blend a little bit of science in with the magic on this one.
Yeah.
One thing that I truly love and was kind of my introduction to some more formal forms of magic is sigil magic. But the thing is, people love to do the whole, you line out the letters and then you chop out certain letters and then you make a shit. And that's great. It's wonderful. Once you practice it enough, you can literally just keep a thought in your mind and make an artistic symbol. Right. But learning to build your own symbol system for luck. I like to start with luck because luck is one of those things that really does open the mind. If you build a symbol for luck and you look at it, you meditate on it, you focus on the fact that I am lucky things happen to me. And I have a specific recording that I give people for this. Because when you think about the fact that you exist at all, think about the coincidences it had to take for your parents to meet. Right? And then for the genetic things that had to happen, just for you to be the person that you are. And then all the coincidences that had to happen to put you in this moment right here, right now. Anyone in this moment right here, right now. All the things your grandparents had to go through. Then their great-grandparents. And you can go all the way back to the beginning of the damn universe. The likelihood that you exist at any given moment is so disproportionately low when you think about it, you have to accept the fact that this is not a statistical aberration, the fact that you are right here, right now. So there's no reason to believe that there are not forces looking out for you. Therefore, you must be lucky. So putting yourself into that state and that understanding, looking at that symbol, you train your reticular activating system to start looking for good fortune. Every person I put this through, I warn them. I'm like, you are going to have moments where stuff just keeps happening that's good for you. Opportunities are literally going to walk up and smack you in the, probably not literally, but walk up and smack you in the face. And sure enough, I have people doing the things, and I tell them about the science experiment for luck, where people who think that they're lucky will find money on the ground more often than those that don't, because they see it. I've had one of my friends in the business, Anthony. I put him through a deep trance experience, very similar to this, and literally within 24 hours, he received a credit offer that let him take multiple trainings that let him like just boost his business. He's doing really well right now. He's doing better than me too. but literally once you set up a central system to enforce your luck on the world, and you can make the argument that this is purely neurological or that this is supernatural. I don't care. Sure. Yeah. As long as it works. And people find these massive opportunities come their way. And when they really sit down and think about it, they have to wonder, is this opportunity coming to me because I asked forces greater than myself, or is it because I would not have seen it if I weren't training myself? Of course, the answer is both.
Yeah, perfect.
Because there are forces out there handing us stuff all the time, good and bad, and it's what you choose to look at that will take you in that direction.
I like that. You said you have a recording for this?
Yeah. I believe I have it up on my YouTube. I can send you the link later if you like.
Yeah, great. That we'll I'll look for that. We'll connect. I'll make sure that gets included in the show notes.
Cool. Yeah. I'll make sure that you get it here in the next hour or so.
Great. Are there any risks that people need to be aware of as they kind of start to look into this, these sorts of ideas?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a saying, in the occult, once you announce that you are a witch, sorcerer, magician, whatever, there's a bell that goes off on the other side. Not a framework I work with. I don't believe in the other side. I don't believe in that type of separation. But you do start getting attention. You start getting the attention both of elements of your own psyche that you are not going to be comfortable with at first. Most people are more afraid of accepting power that they are born with over their own lives than they are the boogeyman. So shadow elements of your own psyche will come up. You have to deal with that. Like you have to accept the fact that you are a creature of phenomenally cosmic importance because you exist, or you can be a monster. Every human being can go either way. And then, of course, you have the stuff that is outside, debatably, your own psyche. Most people who will start experimenting with deep trance states will start to see relevance, strange coincidences. Some people who live in haunted environments will start noticing they are going to see shadow people more often. Mysterious events will start happening. There's no way around it. Once you start knocking on the door, you can't ding-dong ditch the universe, basically. You can't knock on the door and then run off. And once that door is open, you have to go through and complete the journey. And if you don't, things are going to get a little wild for you.
What are some ways that a person could lower those risks or be prepared for that?
Gotcha. So if you find people who can walk you through the process, and I have a class I run once or twice a year. I'll send you a link for that too, if you like, where I can start showing the introductory levels of like energetic work, magical work, trance work as it's related to these things. And trance is so important in this because it's not even an issue of the prefrontal cortex. It's an issue of, can the way you think handle this change? So when you're doing something like, for example, a Kundalini awakening meditation, Can the way that you interact with the world handle this drastic a change? You're going to feel weird energies in your body. You're going to feel thoughts that don't feel like yours. How are you going to process that? And you can see right off the bat how that could cause problems for somebody with no guidance.
Yeah.
So find somebody who is legitimately capable of teaching you. Otherwise, your world's going to get a little crazy. Possibly you're going to get a little crazy too. The second thing is go slow. In the occult, there's a thing we call the sparkle phase, where when you first start, everything works. It's this weird, like, boop, and it goes up and then quickly down. Everything works for the first few weeks to a few months. And that sparkle phase can be very dangerous because people can start experimenting with things they're not ready for. And then at that point, it can become a horror movie at a certain point. And you would be surprised when you do some digging just how many horror movies actually come out of this sparkle phase that people went through. It's actually pretty neat when you start looking at some of them. So yeah, I would say find a teacher and go slow. Those are your two best options.
Okay, great. Yeah. What do you see as the future of altered states? Like you see a lot, it seems like there is a lot of a renaissance kind of of all of these things that we're talking about and more that's happening in the world. So what's giving you hope right now?
I am really overjoyed to see things like Freedom of Information Acts releasing government research into the paranormal and psychic powers. So things like Project Grill Flame, Project Stargate, the remote viewing stuff, the uptick of people who are now willing to step out of the broom closet and literally risk their lives in some cases just by existing and representing their belief system. And that sounds like I'm dramatizing things, but from where I sit, there's about five churches within the 10 miles around me that want to shoot me on sight. Like their preachers recommend this type of stuff. So it can be dangerous. But the fact is, we have so many people now that are stepping forward. And we have legitimate scientific evidence that is talking about the realities of clairvoyance, of remote viewing, like I said. Even some unusual phenomenon that related to psychokinesis, the effect that you can have on the world around you, a mind-body connection. I'm blown away nearly every single day in this world that more and more things are coming out, even aliens now, that the government's like, oh yeah, the aliens are real. Let's go start a war to distract everyone, right? So on the one hand, having these new minds come in, stepping out of cloistered religious systems and embracing their own power is just freaking beautiful to see. On the flip side of that, of course, it is, like you said earlier, it's a pendulum. And groups who think that they are being oppressed by the existence of other people are going to come back hard. So, yeah, I'm happy to see people come out, and I'm just gently reaching out to many of them and saying, like, hey, when things get rough, you need to have a network of like-minded people to work with.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, relevant for just about anyone.
True. I mean, yeah. Like I said earlier, I mean, that's human nature, right?
Yeah.
Help the other person out of the trouble.
How can people learn more about you, Nick, if they want to connect?
If you go to liberationhypnosis.com, I am there. If you go to witchfit, witch and then FITT.com, I am very soon launching a course on that particular. That'll take you to Liberation Hypnosis right now. Very soon it is going to be launching its own product, which is a personal training / magical development course that I'm putting together.
Great.
Which seems like a weird combination, but once you check it out, you can actually see where it goes.
It sounds interesting to me.
I mean, you can't take care of your spirit and neglect your body.
Exactly. Right. They say, the body is your temple.
Yeah. Yeah. So decorate it, make it pretty.
and Nick, what's the one thing you'd like the audience to leave with today?
For everyone to leave with, I think, circling back to what I had said about we're meant to be here. There is no such thing as luck as a random occurrence. And I think it would just be that reminder, the sheer staggering number of likelihoods that, however 14, 17 billion years ago, however long it was, there was supposedly a Big Bang. And then everything that had to happen in that, from the quantum level to Newtonian physics, to the laws of biology as we know them, that had to make you this amazing ghost that's driving, a skeleton made of rock, wrapped in meat, digesting life and then making more life. The fact that you exist at all should not have happened without somebody being involved. And I'm not claiming who it is, but I think everyone needs to spend some time every day focusing on that, because the world is built to make us forget that. To think we're just there to make money and die. And that's a shame.
There's so much more available.
Absolutely. And we need to stay focused on that more than anything else, I think.
It's been really fantastic having you here today, Nick. Thanks for sharing your wisdom.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.